I posted every week. I have posted every week since January 2017 because I read somewhere that the algorithm likes consistency. So that's my whatever other priorities I have to have one YouTube tutorial every week. If you're not passionate about, say, cake decorating tutorials, if that's what you want to do, don't start because you're going to burn out. Because if you have to put in a year or two before your account gets really big, that's a lot of time to be spending on something that you're not really enjoying and also not really getting any returns from. I think that's been the most difficult part of the last year, is going from having quite large chunks of time because my kids were both in preschool to having the baby where I have these tiny snippets of time. So just accepting that this is a season that I'm just going to have to give up on some things and I'm going to have to watch the business stop growing or grow more slowly for a year or two and just be okay with that.
Hey guys, I have a question for you. Do you find yourself working long hours with very little profit? Are you struggling with all the non-baking aspects of your cake business? You know, things like finances, admin, customer communication, marketing. If you've answered yes to these questions, you need to check out our new ebook collection available at www.olbert.shop. We have 6 ebooks. One of them is totally free to download. It's called The 5 Ways to Grow Your Cake Business in 2024. These books are filled with all kinds of information written just for you to help you, empower you, and let you succeed. So go take a look. Anyway, let's get back to the show. Emily Friend. She's an adventurer, having lived in various places around the world, not quite agreeing with what her law degree gave her. She went off to Costa Rica, of all places, to teach. A simple craving for the desserts she loved didn't exist, so she had to go make it herself. You know, the innocence of doing something like this turns you down a path. And for her, she ended up baking and then running a cupcake shop. And eventually, she settled in LA. But all it takes is something like a child to come along and decide, hey, you need to find a new path. So an old video on her phone she uploaded to YouTube years ago ended up giving her an idea. Why don't I go online and teach? The rest may be history, but there's a lot more to the story than just creating content. Listen on to get Emily's baking journey. Emily, so this is brilliant. What's really interesting about having our first British guest who's not in England, because really all the British guests that we've talked to have been in the UK. It's not that I can just say you, although you live in Texas, that's not where your baking journey started. It started way before that. But I want to ask you something even before when you started baking, because you're a law student, you have a degree in law. And I'm curious which type of law, first of all, but then the second follow-up question to this is, how does a creative make the decision to take an educational path down the world of law? What right turn or left turn did you take when you were 16 or 15 that forced you to do this? Enlighten us.
I really enjoyed studying law, but when I started working, it just didn't feel right. It wasn't what I was really passionate about, and I wasn't sure what that was. So just sort of a spur of the moment decision, I took a TEFL course and I went to Costa Rica to teach English just to give myself some distance to figure out what I wanted to do.
You were working as a lawyer or paralegal or in a law firm?
Yeah, I worked in a law firm. I did an internship program in London and...
Wow, okay.
Didn't love it.
Yeah.
So when I got to Costa Rica, I was teaching English and I loved it initially, but after about a year, I figured out it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. And while I had been teaching, I really love eating sweet things and I didn't love the desserts I could buy in Costa Rica. I really wanted ingredients like butter and real chocolate, and they bake with margarine and cocoa powder. So I started baking a lot myself and I loved it. And I was making cakes for my students. And then totally out of the blue, a friend asked me to make her wedding cake. And I'd never made a cake before, but I said yes. And I started practicing and I just fell in love with it. And that's how I ended up doing this.
But your baking skills, though, like you're talking like from scratch at this point, or had you done baking when you were a kid, a child, family member?
Not really, no. So really totally self-taught. I just started searching for recipes. I bought some cookbooks and just started playing around.
Oh, that's amazing, right? Just to go from, but I do relate a little bit because I moved to Singapore in 2008 from the UK. And I think at that time, now Singapore is a massive food scene now, and it's like world foods. It's top notch for any kind of food, kind of cuisine that you want to find. But at that time, it would have been hard in 2008, and I'm just trying to put a timeline for you as well, 2008 to find like English classic cakes, unless you were going to something like a very high-end hotel establishment like Raffles or something.
Mm. Yeah.
For me, and so it'd be interesting to hear for you in Costa Rica, there was one baking shop where I could get proper flour and I could get butter. And I could get cocoa. And I remember going, I just need to make this cake. Was the scene the same in Costa Rica?
Yes, there was one baking shop where I could buy not so much ingredients. Ingredients weren't as tough to get hold of. It was expensive to buy the ingredients I wanted, but they were available. Yeah. Yeah. The things like baking pans and piping tips, which I eventually started using, those were tricky to get hold of because there was one shop and everything was imported from the US. So everything was really expensive. So that was probably the biggest challenge with cakes there.
It's so funny that you're doing this in a country. I mean, I'm assuming you spoke Spanish.
I learned it while I was there.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a learning curve. You're doing the baking, which is a learning curve. And then a friend who must trust you to the moon and back to say, hey, make my wedding cake, to the non-baker.
Or well, at least try and bake it.
Yeah, try, right? How did that end up?
It didn't fall over. It was a fondant cake. And at the time, I was working mostly with fondant from while I was in Costa Rica. So I learned how to make gum paste roses, and looking at the photos, it's definitely not fantastic. It's not magazine worthy. It's quite lumpy fondant. The flowers aren't perfect, but it stood up. They had a cake to cut. It tasted nice. So it was a success, I think.
Yeah, is it typical to have ovens in Costa Rica at the time as well?
Yes, that's a good question. Yes, there were ovens. Not everyone had them in their homes, but they were accessible if you wanted to have one in a business. And actually, when I started the business from home, I did have an oven at home. It didn't have nearly as many settings as ovens typically do in the UK and in the US, but it worked.
Gosh, I'm really impressed, though. But I understand, though, that the success of being one of the few cake makers, or I think you ended up being called the muffin lady at one point.
For a while, yes.
Yeah. So things sort of take off because you eventually outgrow the kitchen that you're in and you make that decision that many bakers do, is like, okay, I don't know if I can do this anymore in my own house. I've got to now grow up a bit and get a proper place. So this whole transition to do this is coming in. But how fast was that for you? Was that a couple of years into doing this?
It was almost exactly 1 year. I started doing it in the house, but I got to the point, I somehow just through random contacts picked up a few business clients. And so I was getting orders for 500 cupcakes or 500 cookies, and they were just taking up every flat surface in the house. So after a few of those, it was just after a big Christmas, which was ridiculous, I started looking for a storefront, and I found a place, just an adorable location right on the main road, very walkable, next to all the big universities. It was just perfect. And at that point, because I'd been doing it for a year, I built up enough. I had a Facebook page. That was all I had on social media at the time. But I built up enough of a presence there and enough regular orders from customers that I just hoped it would transition to a physical storefront. And it did. I was really lucky with my timing, though, just to be clear on how much luck was involved, I think, because I was doing mostly cupcakes at this point, and cupcakes were really new. There wasn't hardly any competition in Costa Rica for cupcakes. And on top of that, it's very common to have people from North America in Costa Rica. It's a lot less common to have people from anywhere in Europe. So being an English baker was so exotic. So yeah. English cupcakes were, yeah, very, very exotic. So it made it quite easy for me because I had something that was seen as being very different, very unique, and just got in on the trend really early. So it really exploded, which was great.
So to set up a cake shop in Costa Rica, were there any rules or regulations that you had to get around, or how was your Spanish at this point? Because I'm guessing that you would have people coming in and out of the cake shop or ordering that were probably ordering Spanish too.
Yes. By this point, my Spanish was possible. Very specific to cake baking. So if I needed to go to the bank or the doctor, I had no idea what to say, but I can tell you how to say anything cake related. But no, the law in Costa Rica, I don't know now, but at the time you could own a business and you could employ people to work in that business as long as you paid your social security or equivalent contributions. So I could hire people and eventually had people baking and working behind the counter for me.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, any of your friends helping you out with this to like get you all going, or are you just relying on finding, hiring as you do any other business owner? I mean, how did you get there?
The first lady I hired was a contact through a friend of a friend of a friend who knew someone who had an interest in baking, and she turned out to be wonderful. So that was really lucky. And then after that, I think I posted a few times on the cake shop was called Sweet Sensations. I posted on the Sweet Sensations page that I was looking for people and they would come in and interview, and yeah, and everything just worked out quite well.
Did you have a plan at the time? Was this because you'd gone to Costa Rica, and I totally get that. You'd gone to Costa Rica to go do something completely different and try and like kind of find what you want to do for your future and maybe discover yourself and not be in this corporate grind. And I'm guessing that you had a 6 month, 1 year, possibly 2 year plan out there. And now this is merging into really establishing yourself in Costa Rica. Was there a plan behind it, or were you just riding the wave?
I was definitely riding the wave. I did have a 1 year plan when I went out, and it got to the end of the year and I loved it. I loved the independence, and I was just learning so much all the time, whether it was Spanish or learning to bake and then starting a business. It was fascinating. And so, no, I didn't really have a plan, and it lasted 5.5 years, I think, before I eventually left when I originally went out for a year. So it definitely ended up being a much more extended journey than I anticipated.
That's really very interesting sort of flow of things. But then the journey makes a whole new change, as we understand, because you meet somebody at this point, and then everything that you've built up at this point has to sort of change, as I understand, because now you wanted or you needed to move. Or, I mean, enlighten us here. What happened? Because you ended up in LA not too long after you meet somebody. So your whole life, what did you have to do with Sweet Sensations and everything else?
That was a process. I sold it, which took almost a year. And in the meantime, I was applying for all of my residency and everything to move to the US. I met a boy from America and all of his family was there, and just seemed like the next logical step. So we moved there together. And then I knew I wanted to stay in the baking world, but I didn't want to start my own business all over. It was an amazing experience, but it was absolutely exhausting and I didn't want to do it again just yet. So I started looking around and I found a chain of cake shops. And so I started working for them, managing one bakery and then managing a few and then opening new ones for them. And that was really fun. But then I got pregnant, and maternity leave in America is so much shorter than England. It's 3 months if you're lucky. And after 3 months, I couldn't leave. I couldn't put my baby into a nursery or a daycare. So that's when I started thinking about what else I could do baking related that I could do from home so I could be with my baby.
Did you think that experience of running your cafe in Costa Rica really helped you to then go and take the next step of actually managing a chain of restaurants? Because
definitely,
I feel like that's the kind of thing you couldn't really go in cold and learn, because you've grown it from, you've done all the hard yards, so you knew exactly what it takes to build a business. So did that help you when you went into that next transition?
Yes, I think definitely. But also it just was very humbling, because I realized how much I didn't know. Because when I opened a business, I had no business knowledge. I'd never taken a business course. I didn't know anything about HR or managing people. I was so naive, and I just figured it out as I went along, and I made so many mistakes. But working for a company that had systems and structures and processes in place was, it made everything a lot easier knowing how to do things. And it just, yeah, it was a very different challenge to the one that I had been doing. I really enjoyed it.
How was your adjustment, though, of moving to America? I mean, you'd never lived there before, and it's quite different to Costa Rica, and LA is on the other end of the spectrum of what you would consider to be an average life. I mean, I lived in America for several years myself, and mostly in the Midwest, but then I moved further west and west, and so it's quite a jump to go from San Pedro, Costa Rica to Los Angeles. How did you manage that?
I don't remember that particular part being the challenge. I think it was more just figuring out what I wanted to do, not where I wanted to do it. I think people were very friendly. It helped that my husband was from California. So initially we had his friends and family to start off with. It wasn't moving somewhere new on my own. It's definitely different to Costa Rica, but different, not necessarily in a bad way.
Yeah.
Things were easier. It was safer, which was nice. And yeah, it was exciting. It was exciting.
Yeah, you strike me as someone who quite likes the excitement and having that change. Before you went to Costa Rica, did you always lived in the UK or did you moved around?
No, it's funny. When I chose the name British Girl Bakes, my husband joked that I'm not really British. I'm Brit-ish because I'm not very British because I was born in the UK and I lived there until I was five. But then I actually moved with my family to New York and then Singapore. Interesting that you lived there too. Mm. And then I studied in Edinburgh and in Canada. And then I moved to Costa Rica, then America. So I've only lived, I think, 9 years of my life in England. So it's a very short period of time.
You're used to that change and embracing change and being adaptable. And I mean, I say this because like Haf's lived in a few continents himself. So he's moved around a lot. And I think those skills of just being able to get up and go and move, they're quite interesting to be able to get up and do that because I don't think everyone can. And it just strikes me that you're like, yeah, I'm going to go to LA. That's fine. No problem.
It makes sense though, because it's like it's probably your fourth or fifth move by that point internationally. So
right.
What's not to like? And you're moving with somebody you know. So mm-hmm. it's probably one of the more easier transitions now that I think about it.
And I think so.
You didn't necessarily have to worry immediately about, okay, what am I going to do for work straight away or anything like that. It's just more about, okay, let's just go and see what happens. And
yeah,
I know I've done it before. I'll make something of it again, which I think is the harder bit to see when you hear about moving country or take on the thought of moving country. It can obviously be quite daunting, but at the same time, it's what you make of it and what you put into it that gets you where you are. But when you got there, was there anything like cupcake shops open or anything like that that you'd seen around LA at that time?
Yes. Yeah. So this was now 2015.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
2015. So yes, cupcakes were a big thing there
sure.
already.
Sure. Because we've actually, now that I think about it, now you say 2015, we've had a guest on from California, Greater LA, who was on Cupcake Wars.
Oh, fun.
Around that time, and she ended up winning it. And now that I think about it, that is that sort of time frame that you're working with. So for you, this is probably like, oh, this is cool. I can see cupcakes here. I can see all this. But where did the inspiration for you to go and do something for yourself come from? Because obviously you have all the skill and knowledge, but did you see someone else doing this or did you just think, I've got some knowledge to share, how do I share it? Tell us.
It's an interesting, I guess, backstory. When I was in Costa Rica and I had the cake shop or the cupcake shop, I would get custom cake orders and people would want very strange things. And one of the things that someone asked me to make was a cake in the shape of a Mercedes. And so I thought just randomly it would be a fun idea to film it and then share it just to show what goes into the process of making a custom cake. So I set up my phone and I think there must have been a time lapse. Oh, actually, sorry, this is before phones. It must have been my camera. Okay. I used my camera. I took a video of the process, which was hours long of making this car-shaped cake. And then I sped it up and I couldn't find out how to put it onto my Facebook page without getting it through YouTube. So I ended up putting it on YouTube. Totally forgot about it. And then when I was at home with the baby, I was writing some notes down, thinking about possibly writing a book about the Costa Rica experience. And I remembered this video and I went to look at it and it had over 100,000 views on YouTube.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was blown away. And at the same time, this is while I'm thinking, how can I stay home with the baby instead of going back to work? And I thought, what if this could be a thing? What if I could make videos of interesting ways of making cakes and share them? And that could potentially be an option as a job to stay at home. And my challenge was that I think buttercream is a bit more interesting to watch than fondant. And I had worked almost exclusively with fondant on cakes. So I started playing around with buttercream and trying to teach myself how to make buttercream cakes. But whenever I was watching anything on YouTube to try and learn something, I found the videos were really difficult to follow because most videos at the time anyway were so beautifully edited and the process looked so smooth and easy. And then I would try to do it. And there must have been steps missing, like the uglier parts which weren't shown. And I didn't know how to troubleshoot that for myself. So I waded through the process, but then eventually thought, actually, it would be quite fun to make tutorials that weren't perfectly beautiful, that also showed the bad bits, like the piping bag exploding onto the cake, or how to fill in the weird air bubbles you get in your frosting, those sort of things. So that's what my goal was. The idea behind the videos was, let's break tutorials down so step by step that someone who's never made a cake before can follow it and get the same results. So that was where the YouTube channel started.
That's brilliant, because you probably would have found all these comments from people saying all these questions, and you've just not even looked at this video for years. And people just thought, oh, well, this sucks. She posted a video, she doesn't respond to anything, you know. And then, oh, sorry, guys, there's like 500 questions here on how to do this.
During that time where you got 100,000 views on your Mercedes cake, did you grow a following base? Was there, so when you logged on, was it like 1,000 followers or?
No, it was a few hundred. It wasn't huge. I had expected it to be more based on how many views.
We hear quite a lot that, especially for like YouTube, growing to that first 100 is really hard, and then 100 to 1,000 is hard, and then it can start to propel itself and grow from there.
Yeah.
Is that what you found when you started posting videos and content online?
Yes. Just to clarify, this Mercedes car cake was on the Sweet Sensations YouTube channel, which I don't own anymore. I sold the business. So it was, yes, it did have lots of views and it had started gaining a following, but I had to start from scratch with British Girl Bakes. And so yes, definitely the first 100, actually, sorry, the first 100 was actually probably the easiest, because I just sent a mass email out to everyone I knew and said, please subscribe to this channel, because maybe not anymore, but at the time you needed 100 subscribers before you could choose your own URL. So if I wanted it to be youtube.com/British Girl Bakes, I needed at least 100 subscribers. So I emailed everyone and got that first 100, but then getting to 1,000 was slow. It took months, probably 6 months to get to 1,000. I posted every week.
Oh, wow.
I have posted every week since January 2017, because I read somewhere that the algorithm likes consistency. So that's my, whatever other priorities I have, I have to have one YouTube tutorial every week.
Well, I also think it's having that kind of consistency for your following as you grow is it becomes like habitual, right? It's like listening to this podcast. We try to put one out every week and you feel like, okay, well, there's something there. And if you're subscribing and you just pop onto YouTube, you're going to see it, right? There it is, the latest video from British Girl Bakes, and you'll watch and you just get that following and that loyalty. And it's a bit more consistent than what you see on Instagram, or it seems like you're competing with a lot more people. But with YouTube, I don't know, because maybe you can display so much more on the screen, especially if you log on from a laptop or a TV. Loads of your subscribers or loads of your subscriptions appear. So there's a really good chance that you're going to be up there and people will see you in just almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So having a consistent set of content, I think, does two things. I think it gives you that loyalty. But the second thing is, when you are lucky enough to get to the point of starting to monetize it, when you look at now since 2017, weekly, you're talking hundreds of videos, there's hundreds of opportunities to display an ad for that can be monetized for you if people end up, you know, deciding to go back through the archives of British Girl Bakes and think, like,
yeah,
where's that Mercedes cake that she kept talking about? And then you don't find it. But so I think there's an advantage to doing that. But that consistency must be a fight or a bit of a struggle from time to time. You're trying to go on holiday at one point. Maybe you just wake up and you struggle with
babies.
Yeah. You have kids. You have that creativity, lack of creativity barrier, whatever you want to call it. I mean, there must be several experiences like this where you just sat there and go, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to create.
Yes. Yes. At the beginning, because I had comparatively so much free time, it was taking me a week to make the video and share it, and that was it. Whereas now, because I have so much less time, it's more, I'll do it in bulk. So I'll do 2 or 3 months of videos at a time. I'll brainstorm the titles. I'll make a bunch of cakes and try and use each cake for different elements of different tutorials. So I'm really getting the most out of each cake. And then, yeah, sort of batch creating and then I'll script and I'll audio and I'll edit and I'll upload and schedule all of those videos so that then they're set up for the next 3 months. And then maybe I can spend the next month or two working on a course for my online cake school or something else. Or actually, I just got back from a month visiting family in England when I didn't have to work because I'd scheduled everything ahead. So yeah, doing it every week, it is a, I guess, a burden. It's a lot to coordinate, but it does give you a lot of flexibility because you can schedule things in advance.
It's your job as well. I mean, that's like your primary work life is doing this. So it's, you kind of have to prioritize it a little bit. So do you say that you batch bake a load of cakes then as well when you're doing a load of videos?
Yeah, I'll try and bake about once a month.
Okay.
And then I have three freezers. I just fill up all of the freezers with cake layers. And then I'll do a week of just crumb coating and maybe frosting all of the cakes. And then one by one, I'll go through the decorations. So it's a slow process because I do it in so much in bulk, but it does mean I can be the most efficient with my time by spending it either baking or frosting or decorating or editing. Yeah. So I can get more done because I have such short periods of time to work with. I have three little ones at home.
Rachel, I was just going to ask you, like, it sounds like she's a one-man show here. I mean, you don't have any help, do you?
No.
It doesn't sound like anyone's helping you do any of this.
My husband has a background in sales and marketing. So he sometimes will come up with really, really catchy titles for my YouTube videos. He taught me about email marketing. So I have a newsletter. So he's definitely helped with a lot of behind the scenes setting up of things just because I didn't know anything about marketing. So that's been really useful. But no, I'm the only one who does everything else at the moment.
I mean, it's literally incredible, Emily, because I'm thinking that you have like hundreds of cake decorating tutorials online. And just to name a few, you got like from flower pot, textured fish, fault line, rainbow zigzags, painted buttercream, and so many more. And I just think there's a lot of time that goes into baking. Then there's another load of time that goes into decorating and filming and editing, creating content behind the scenes. And I can't imagine the amount of camera angles and then you going back afterwards and doing all the voiceovers and creating content, which then would be for Instagram, which then would be for YouTube, YouTube Shorts, TikTok, if you start to venture into those areas, plus all your online content, which you sell online as well, and email marketing. It is exhausting. And you have three kids.
It's a lot. But I think what works really well is because I do have three little ones, they're almost one, 3 and 5. And I spend so much time with them, which is amazing because I have this flexibility. But at the same time, spending so much time with them really motivates me to do cake things because it's my release. It's my escape. Mm-hmm. When they go to bed at night, I could just sit and watch TV. But instead, if I actually make something, if I do something, I feel so productive in such a nice way. And even if I've had a really hard day of parenting and the kids have been absolutely awful and I feel a massive failure as a mom, I can have a little win, like a lot of views on one of my videos or something that happens professionally, which makes the day seem a bit more of a success. So it's a nice balance having the two. And I think having the cakes to keep me sort of sane makes me a better parent. And then having the parenting to make me more motivated to spend time on the cake stuff really works to help both sides of that.
It's like an outlet, right? That both of them become quite efficient. So you probably time box your when you are working. So how can I be most efficient with these hours in the day? I've only got 2 hours, so I need to really maximize those 2 hours. And hey, it's in the morning. That's probably when I've got the most mental energy. So that's where I'm going to apply into editing or I don't know, filming or something rather than going through comments on YouTube or answering stuff, which you might do later in the evening.
Yeah.
One question I have is, A, you must consume a lot of content yourself because you're always coming up with new ideas and trends and predicting trends and all sorts of stuff. Like, your content is amazing. It's all over the place with help and advice and tips and tricks. But do you ever get like a block? And do you feel the pressure as well? There's sometimes that you just have those weeks where you're just like, I do not know. I do not want to look at cake stuff. I know personally for me, and we're online and we consume a lot of content, that sometimes I have to say to myself, nothing. I need to look at nothing and just recharge or read a book or take a bit of time away from the business.
I think, honestly, that's how I feel with Instagram. I get so burnt out just looking at Instagram because I think with YouTube, I set myself this goal. I'm going to do one YouTube video a week, and that's manageable. I can do that. So that's fine. With Instagram, I used to try and post every day and I just couldn't keep up with it. So now whenever I go on there and I see people are posting every day, I feel like I'm failing because I really can't keep up. I just had to prioritize. And since my cake school makes the most money and then YouTube, those were the ones that got prioritized. And then Instagram just kind of got dropped. So I'll occasionally share something when I feel motivated to, but when I don't feel motivated, I just don't. And so that one just sort of fell off the to-do list.
I mean, something's got to give at some point, but I mean, I would even suggest you got to go where the revenue is in many cases and also that works best for you. I did see an article actually where you did describe how you do time box your days.
It's unteachable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Where you break into 2-hour chunks quite well, and then you might have this long 2 to 8 p.m. window with the kids and night dinner and getting ready for bed and all that. But that then allows you another couple hours later to wind down, but also maybe finish off some stuff you need to finish off for the day. It all sounds great in the perfect day when the kids are cooperating and no one's sick and all this.
And that was pre-baby.
And then, okay, well, so yeah. So how much has that time boxing daily schedule structure changed now?
It's changed a lot because I had a baby almost a year ago and he's been home with me. So now it just revolves around his naps. The last few weeks, well, we're about to go into school starts here in 2 weeks. And so my oldest two will be going into school and preschool. And then I just have to figure out what I want to do with the baby. Probably get a babysitter for a few hours a day just so I can keep on top of things. So it's difficult to schedule. And I do end up doing most of the things after bedtime, which is not ideal. I'd prefer to do it earlier in the day when you mentioned, Rachel, you're much more productive earlier in the day when you're not exhausted. So yeah, everything's up a bit up in the air at the moment. I don't really have a plan of how things are going to work over the next few months, but I'm hoping maybe some childcare that I'll be able to have a more reliable schedule and be able to plan things properly.
You've got to do what you've got to do, right? In this situation, I was wondering though, with the popularity of your YouTube, and I mean, even your Instagram, you're nearing on 300,000 followers, which is a humongous feat in itself. Even if it took you many, many years, it's still a big number. Has that brought in brands, let's say, to come and work with you on doing brand-based content, collaborations and things like that, that is maybe something that you didn't actually consider or factor into your day, and now there's a new opportunity that you've got to try and find the time to? Have you had these things happening as well?
Yes, that's a very real way of describing it. How do you fit it in? Yes, I have done some brand work with brands like Amazon and with Skillshare. And it's fun, it's exciting, it's something new, but it's also really difficult to carve time out for it because I think when you're already sort of at your maximum bandwidth, something has to give if you want to take on new projects. So I like the idea of working with brands. It's challenging, or it has been challenging while I've had such young children at home, but I'm hoping as they get a bit older, things get easier and there ends up being more flexibility and time to do things like that.
I think that's a very realistic answer. And I really appreciate you saying it that way, because I think there'll be a lot of people listening to this, you know, hearing about people do these brand deals and what opportunities that can bring, which is great. But then there's that dose of reality in there of like, well, hang on, doing one of those and content for one of those could take you 1 or 2 days if you're not really used to it.
Easily, yes.
And where do you take 1 or 2 days out of your week to go focus on this? Because there's probably a deadline.
Yes, and when a day is usually 3 hours.
Yeah, right. And you may have a more, they may put a deadline on you and other things.
It could be just, it's a season in your life right now. So right now you've got young kids, but you've got very young, but you've got a baby as well. So it's a different season. And I think you may get to a point where you go, okay, it takes me a lot of time to produce YouTube content. And it might be at some point you go, okay, I don't want to do that anymore or commit to this weekly basis. So that then that frees up your headspace to think about other avenues or doing different things. And so you may pivot as you go along in your journey so that then you can take on different projects. That there may be a really good brand deal, or you might come out with your own British Girl range of baking accessories or other things that you would need that headspace, or working with big supermarket chain. I don't know. There's lots of opportunities out there. But I think that there's always a season in our life, and sometimes you can push, and sometimes you have to like hold back and just maintain. And that's okay as well, right?
I think that's been the most difficult part of the last year, is going from having quite large chunks of time, because my kids were both in preschool, to having the baby where I have these tiny snippets of time. So just accepting that this is a season that I'm just going to have to give up on some things, and I'm going to have to watch the business stop growing or grow more slowly for a year or two and just be okay with that.
And I think it's an inspiration just to hold in there and stick in there, because I'm sure there's many moments where you're just like, I cannot do this, I cannot maintain all of this. Yeah. And I think it's a real conundrum for parents, like juggling young kids, is like just holding in on and just maintaining your career and sanity is a big achievement. So you should don't be so hard on yourself, honestly, because yeah. I think it's really, we can be really hard on ourselves, because we're like, well, we should be able to do this. I've seen someone else can do that, or I've seen, et cetera. And sometimes you just got to be able to just let go a little bit, or just go, all right, what do I need to do to cover the basics this week? And then get perspective. I'm sure there's lots of conversations with your husband where you're like, I've had enough.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about cupcake boxes, especially if you need room for tall ones or floral cupcakes. There's never really been a cupcake box on the market that gave you the confidence to safely transport them without damaging them. Nor has there been anything that makes it easy to place or remove cupcakes without ruining those pretty decorations. Until now. The Olba cupcake box fixes all these issues. Plenty of height, strong, and a gorgeous cupcake box that opens fully into a built-in serving tray. No mess, no fuss, no cupcake teeth, and no damage. Even your customers will appreciate just how easy it is to open the box and serve right from the tray. Check them out at www.olba.shop. Now, I know you've said in the past on other interviews that you're quite nerdy in the technical sense. You love the aspects of editing and the feeling of putting together a video and editing it all yourself. And I agree, it's actually a lot of fun to do it. But man, is it time consuming. I mean, for each minute of video you're talking, you can spend half an hour editing, right? If you want to add loads of interesting effects or timings or cuts or whatever. So yeah. You ever stop to think like, okay, well, maybe I could just offload some of that to somebody else just to do that bit?
Yeah.
And then maybe reintroduce it later back to me, you know?
Yes. That's the biggest discussion my husband and I have, that he thinks outsourcing is the way to go because he sees me spend so much time on the editing. But it's difficult. It's difficult to relinquish control on something that I feel I do the best way. And so letting someone else take over and do it their way is difficult. It's definitely something that's on the to-do list to think about and find someone who can edit in a way that I really like and probably does it a lot better than me. But it's also, I think, the biggest block for me is the setup. Once it's up and running, yes, excellent, massive time saver. But the process to get it going, of finding new systems that work for me and an editor so that we're on the same page, and just setting everything up, is just such a massive time-consuming commitment. I just don't have time to carve that out of my life at the moment. So maybe a few months down the line.
Yeah. You're literally holding on right now, making sure that yes. You can get those episodes done. So
exactly. Maybe
that will come. So when you came onto YouTube and started producing a lot of your content, it was probably not as competitive as it is now. So a lot of successful bakers, they sell their own buttercream, they have their own tutorials, they have recipes, all sorts of stuff. It seems like you hit a certain number on Instagram or social media, and then you can start to monetize that or sell your recipes, etc., to your audiences. Now, you have the advantage of that you've grown a big following and you started a lot earlier on, and you've got a lot of loyal people, a lot of huge views on YouTube. But how do you stay ahead in such a competitive landscape? And have you noticed changes to any of that profile of people? Like, there's a big wave now coming on of people selling a lot of recipes. Does that impact you, or does it just mean that there's more people baking?
Hmm. I think definitely with COVID, the number of people who started baking just skyrocketed. But as far as competition, I don't use social media much personally. And so I'm not very aware of what's going on with the rest of the cake world. I follow different bakers on Instagram. I don't follow any on YouTube. So I don't really know. I wouldn't be the one to ask whether I notice people sharing more recipes or what other people are doing. I definitely should be more on top of it. But it's the same with trends like TikTok. It took me forever to get on there. And I gave up after about a month because I couldn't handle so many accounts. But I'm not very on top of different
bakers selling their recipes, right?
Right. I'm not very aware of what's going on in the rest of the cake world necessarily. I'm just in my own little zone at the moment, just working on my stuff and trying to get that done.
Yeah, actually, I was just going to say, going back to that relinquishing responsibility point. I mean, we've spoken to so many bakers who won't even go and hire someone to come in and clean after they finish baking, because it's just like, well, I'll just do it myself. It's my domain. It's my control. It's okay. So finding a cleaner is not exactly something that you need to find like with an editor, right? It's not like you have to gel on the same style and design and, let's say, workflow and all this. You just have to find someone to wash your dishes. But even then, that can still be a struggle just for somebody to go and say, all right, I'm going to go do that.
But then you've got to have set hours of when you're doing those things.
So
right?
It's so tricky to balance this in that way. But I will go back to what Rachel's asking on the trends and other things. You know, you mentioned TikTok. What a struggle, right? Like, here's a new platform that you can be crazy successful at, but you have to almost unlearn everything that you've been doing for the last few years on another platform like Instagram to be successful on TikTok in some respects. You could say YouTube too, actually, to be honest, because it's not like the same content always carries across each platform,
exactly.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you put so much effort into one platform. How much more effort do you need to put into to repurpose it? Sometimes it works, sometimes it just doesn't. I mean, you have an Instagram reel that I think has something like 6.6 million views.
Oh, the melting cake.
And it's a cake that's just melting in 70 degree, 22 centigrade in an hour. And you just, like, you put that up there. You never thought that was going to be a 6.6 million view reel, right? You say, this is just some of the randomness of this still comes into play. There's obviously a lot of formulas and things you can do and the content you can create to be successful, but there's also stuff that just comes out of nowhere, right?
And then you're so excited. So I share the same thing on YouTube and it gets like 100 views. You just, there's no method behind the madness.
You have your own little baking studio in your house. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did that come at a certain point in your life where you're just like, I need a place where I can just close off from everyone and not be, mom, I need this, or I want to get on, I'm midway through filming? Did it come about because of something to do with the children, or was it just that you needed a separate space just to put your head into and you know, almost go into work mode for yourself?
A combination of those. The first studio I had was the dining room table in our first apartment in LA. And then the next two were in garages, where it was just the only place where I could put all of my stuff and leave it there, not have to clean up before every meal. And I could also control the lighting by using artificial lights. And then you wouldn't know if I'd done it during a morning nap or if I'd filmed after bedtime at night, the light wouldn't be different. So garages. And then we moved to this current house 2 years ago, and there was a dining room, and we don't usually eat in the dining room. So we decided to turn it into a studio. And it's been absolutely magical, because you mentioned I live in Texas. And so summers are insanely hot, like insanely hot in the 40s Celsius. And then winters, it freezes. And so when I was in the garage frosting a cake in summer, the buttercream would just be melting off the cake. And I could only keep it out of the fridge for 2 or 3 minutes at a time. And also I was just absolutely drenched. It was so hot. And then in winter, the frosting would freeze onto the cake as I was trying to smooth it. And I couldn't work because it was so cold. So now I'm in an air-conditioned room. The temperature's the same. I have my lighting set up. It's so much easier. And it's convenient because it's right here in the house. But I do have doors that close, so I can shut off and just be in my own little world for a bit.
That's pretty cool. And, like, give us a, are you in the studio right now?
I am.
So what sort of equipment, like how many lights do you use? How many cameras? Do you just use phones? Do you have a proper camera? Like how's it all work? I'm just curious.
I have two proper cameras, Canons, and then I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7 like big softbox lights. Should I try and turn the camera to show you?
Yeah, why not? Let's have a quick look. Well, this just to see if we can. Okay,
yeah. These are the lights like mounted on the ceiling.
For people listening, imagine going in for your family photo shoot in the studio and you got those big white lights. That's what we're looking at here. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's great.
So kids obviously aren't. No kids in this room. Well,
we say that, but I have seen your boys that they've got, and they've also got their own little Instagram page as well, right?
I actually just took it down, but yes, I was. Okay. They've been watching me film and they were just desperate to do it themselves. And we bake a lot together, but never filmed it. So about a year ago, they asked me to turn the cameras on and to let them bake. And they did. And it was adorable. And I did the editing and I showed them the video. And they were so proud to see themselves on the screen. They absolutely loved it. And they say what I think are the cutest things while they're baking. But I just started to think these are the sort of things that they're saying that they might be really embarrassed about when they're teenagers, and they're 3 and 5. They don't really understand when something goes online, it's there potentially forever.
Yeah.
They're not really old enough to grasp this concept. So I felt, you know, I just started to feel uncomfortable about sharing their stuff when they're not really mature enough to agree to it. So I ended up taking it down, and maybe we'll put it back up in the future. I'm going back and forth in my head about it at the moment. But yes, they love baking. I do still like the bake in the studio. That's the only time they're allowed in here because there are so many cameras and tripods and wires around. It's not the most child-safe place.
I'm just always impressed that bakers' kids like baking because my two kids just have no interest in it, no interest in my cakes unless it's like literal cake scraps. But
and only chocolate.
Possibly chocolate.
Mine are the same, only chocolate.
And I bring out cakes or I take them to friends' houses. Have you got ice cream? They don't want my cake.
I think maybe it's because most of my cakes, I will frost and refrost and refrost again until they're not edible. Or if I do it really quickly, I'll give it away to someone because I've had so much cake in my lifetime. I don't need more cake. So I give it away. So they actually very rarely get cake on their birthdays. Maybe if I make it for a special occasion, but they're still very intrigued by cake.
I'll have to get them to meet my kids and maybe they'll be inspired a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Right next to me is our dessert fridge where Rachel will put all the cakes that she makes and we use for content. And we don't refrost a lot of stuff because we do end up giving everything to people, obviously, because, hey, look, it's free cake and great way to get some favors in with some people to drop off. Someone needs to do a school pickup for you because you can't be there on time and all this. Yeah, the kids are just not. They're just so desensitized to it. It's like, go look in the fridge.
But I think actually it's my therapy. It's my outlet. So Half Hour said to me, oh, maybe you should just refrost or do something. I'm like, no, I quite enjoy this whole process of decorating and creating. And although it takes time, it's my time out in some ways as well. So I quite enjoy
totally understand that.
Taking that process and creating something from scratch, even though it would probably save me hours and hours of time if I didn't do that. But I think it keeps me sane as well, baking. So
totally understand.
So for you then, now we talked about this, you know, a season, quote unquote, that you're in, obviously, with a very young child that's sort of getting in the way of you being able to be 100% productive. But where do you see the future for your brand, British Girl Bakes? I mean, what other things are out there that you think you'd like to do that you haven't got to do yet? And you're just sort of holding time until that opportunity comes. The kids are a bit older, you get a bit more free time. What's on that bucket list?
A few things. I, just before COVID started, I was going to teach at a few different places across the US, which it was quite fun. We had this tour set up and then COVID happened and that didn't work out. I would like to potentially revisit that again. I've also had some requests to be on different TV programs, which just sound amazing, but the timing just wasn't right with really young children. But now that they're all getting a bit bigger, I like the idea of doing that again, or actually following through with that. So I'm open to lots of different avenues. I don't have a very clear idea of where I want the business to go. So lots of possibilities to explore.
I guess that's why you're sustaining your and growing your YouTube platform so that those offers still stay there as well, because this is stuff that you want to do. It's just, it's a time restriction right now. So that's your limitation. And I'm sure they will still be there because you've been doing this for years now. So it's not going to go away. I remember when I got into baking around 2017, 18, and your YouTube was starting to blow up around that time. So I do remember seeing a lot of your tutorials.
Oh, really? How funny.
Yeah, definitely. You and George's Cakes and on YouTube were definitely ones when I was looking for tips of how to do certain things, those would pick up. And
that's so funny. So,
yeah, no, it's amazing how sometimes life takes its own twists and turns. But one question I have before we go into our wrap-up round was, what advice would you give to bakers who were interested to start a platform like you have on YouTube doing tutorials, but maybe lack that confidence in getting started or don't necessarily want to put their face in front of the camera? Is there anything that you've learned over the years or that would work, or any advice?
As far as not putting your face in front of the camera, I hardly ever showed my face at the beginning for the same reason. I hate talking into the camera. I hate hearing. Yeah. So it's definitely possible to do it without showing your face. I initially did very close up videos where you could never see me in the videos. I'd sort of stand to the side, scraping the frosting around the side of the cake so you couldn't see me, which meant also I could do it in my pajamas as a bonus. But yeah, so you definitely don't have to show your face. As far as tips for starting out, I think it's difficult because typically people's inspiration for starting a channel is that they've seen something else be hugely successful and they want to do the same. So you have these really unrealistic expectations for your own channel or account. So somehow really lowering those expectations and expecting it to be really slow to grow. And what goes with that is making sure that you're doing something you absolutely love. So if you're not passionate about, say, cake decorating tutorials, if that's what you want to do, don't start, because you're going to burn out. Because if you have to put in a year or two before your account gets really big, that's a lot of time to be spending on something that you're not really enjoying and also not really getting any returns from.
Wise words.
Excellent advice. Excellent advice. I appreciate all that. Listen, we're going to wrap up with our quick fire question round. First thing that comes to mind, you can use for your answer. You can explain it or you don't have to explain it. Totally up to you.
Okay.
I'm going to start. Can you tell me what is your preference, American buttercream or Swiss meringue buttercream?
American buttercream.
Okay.
Is that because it's faster to make?
Faster to make. I think it's more versatile. It's so easy to store if you want to make it in batch and then freeze it and use it later. And I love the flavor.
Oh, amazing. One aspect of baking you won't compromise on?
I think having a stand mixer. I hate baking with a hand mixer.
Oh gosh, that's a good one. That takes me back so far with the hand mixer.
I actually remember those days. Those things that get pop out and you clean.
I just used to take ages to get the butter and sugar. Why? It used to spend like 8 minutes on high.
Yes, or when the bowl doesn't automatically spin in the mixer. I know my mum's didn't. I think maybe it was broken. And so you're spinning the bowl with one hand and, it's awful. Yeah.
All right. How about if you have a baking book from your bookshelf you would like to recommend?
I don't think I have any.
Oh, that's okay.
We've had that answer before as
well. Yeah, so that's true. Not everyone has a collection, for sure.
I don't.
Some people just jump on YouTube or Google.
BBC for good food.
Exactly.
Okay. Who would you want to make your next birthday cake?
Duff Goldman.
Well, that was instant.
Yes. So when I started doing cakes in Costa Rica, the TV I had, the only thing that was available that I was interested in watching was cake. Sorry, what's it called? Duff. Oh, it's just gone from my mind. Ace of Cakes.
Ace of Cakes.
And so when I would get home in the evenings, that was always playing and I would watch Ace of Cakes, and he did these amazing cakes with fondant that would, like a rocket that would shoot into the sky and then you could eat it, or a guitar that you could actually play and then eat. And it was fascinating and really inspiring for someone who's just starting out with fondant cakes. And so I absolutely worship him. He's my cake god. And I've tried meeting him a few times at different events. It's never worked out. But absolutely him.
All right. If you're listening, Duff Goldman, please.
Yes, please.
Reach out either to us. We'll connect you. It doesn't matter. Totally fine. Annalise, thank you so much for that. That was just really, really nice. I really appreciate you taking your time amongst your extremely busy day to squeeze in an hour and have a little chat with us. Honestly, it's been really, really lovely. Thanks for parting all this wisdom and advice too. We really appreciate it.
It's been really fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. You're welcome. That's episode 29, My Baking Journey. Hope you enjoyed that one with Emily. Check out the show notes to hear everything you want to hear about Emily's story and her baking journey. And if you would like to sponsor this podcast, drop us a line, info@olbert.uk. Sponsorship opportunities start at as little as £50 per episode. So, if you're keen to get your name out there to a huge audience of bakers globally, drop me a note. Anyway, we're back next week with more fabulous stories from fabulous bakers. We will see you then. Bye-bye.